was read by Tom Sanders. This is BBC Radio 4, where in a moment the novelist Marion Keyes enters Stephen Mangan's pretend confessional, detailing a disservice she did that still haunts her 20 years after the event, and what she does with or to boiled eggs. That's coming up after this.
The singer Jarvis Cocker is sorting through his loft.
This is a star jumper.
A blue plastic spaceman.
The ticket to the John Peel Roadshow.
Reflecting on forgotten items and their relationship to his life.
Can't believe I found this.
This was the real beginning of the pulp aesthetic.
It's my Dead Sea Scrolls.
Good Pop, Bad Pop by Jarvis Cocker. Part of Radio 4's 90s season.
It was more impromptu daytime chemistry class than Good Evening Wembley.
Next Monday to Friday morning at 9:45 on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
Well, it's time now for some soul-bearing conversation. This week, our virtual confessional box makes its way to Dublin so that confessor Stephen Mangan can talk shame, embarrassment and guilt with a celebrated novelist.
I'm Stephen Mangan, welcome to The Confessional. For the next half hour, I'll be officiating in this imaginary booth as I drag admissions of shame, guilt, or toe-curling embarrassment out of a reluctant penitent. Or maybe not so penitent, who knows? So, in the spirit of wholehearted muckraking, which I'm going to thoroughly enjoy, let's meet this week's guest. She's a winner of both the Irish Popular Fiction and the Popular Non-Fiction Book of the Year, so I don't know whether we can believe her or not. Her novels deal with subjects like domestic violence, drug abuse, divorce and alcoholism, but with a humour and lightness of touch unparalleled in modern fiction, outside perhaps some of the bleaker episodes of Peppa Pig. In an interview with The Guardian, she admitted she has never eaten a boiled egg. Maybe today we'll find out what she does with them. A very warm welcome to Marianne Keyes. Hello, Marianne.
Hi, Stephen.
Now, I believe we grew up in the same religious tradition. Are you a believer in confession?
I am not a believer in confession. In Ireland, like, going to confession counted as a social life up to the mid-90s. You know, I would never have genuinely told a priest anything that I was properly ashamed of. Like, everybody made up the same three sins every week, and we were given the same, God, I can't even remember what it's called now, penance.
Penance,
isn't that
yeah.
fantastic that
isn't
I can't
that great?
Even remember?
That's great,
yeah, because, like, I was a Catholic to the bones, like, really, really scared of the whole business. And, yeah, obviously I'm a lot freer now than I knew I was.
Yeah, I mean, I was an altar boy growing up as a kid. And yes, lots of confessions. And you're right. I mean, it's the one place you don't tell the truth,
yeah.
which is obviously not really the idea.
The thing is, like, when I was a kid, I hadn't done anything wrong.
Right.
There really was nothing bad that I could bring. But yet we were obliged to bring something. And I mean, it's funny, as I, you know, when I got older and I did do things wrong, I do still like the idea of talking to a kind, wise person who has done worse things than me and, you know, and who says, Asher, look it, you know, I'm sure you didn't mean it or, you know, something nice. Like, I mean, they do say that confession is good for the soul. And I suppose if it is a wholehearted confession with somebody you trust, it can be, it can like lift burdens off a person. Well, I mean, it has for me.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you need confession. We will go on a journey of the imagination. Ideally, we'd love to have provided you with a real confessional box, but we'll have to conjure one up. Where would be an ideal place? Is it somewhere dark and slightly mournful that smells of beeswax and mildew, or is it and cabbage possibly, or is it somewhere bright and airy with a sea view? Where would be?
I'll tell you, there's a place in Wicklow called the Devil's Glen, and it's a walk in a forest by a river, a small river. And it is just so beautiful. And the light is very, it's dim and it's green because it's all been filtered through leaves. And the sound of the water is lovely. So, you know, it could kind of muffle the quiet sobbing.
Yeah.
And obviously we would be both walking shoulder to shoulder so you couldn't see my face.
Great.
So that would be a good way to tell you the things that I'm really ashamed of.
It sounds amazing. I might go there as soon as we finish this chat. Okay, thank you, Marianne Keyes. Can we reveal your first guilty secret, please?
Okay, this I will take to my grave. I will never recover from it. It was at least 20 years ago. And I should preface it by saying I'm the world's worst at giving directions to people. Mm. I don't think that way. I say it's because I'm artistic. And, you know, if people ask me to tell them how to get to a place, I have to get into the car with them. Even then I'm bad on things like, you know, well, at the next traffic light, turn right. No, it's the one after. Oh, no, this one. Like, I am terrible. So I was out walking one evening and a car pulled up beside me and they were looking for directions. And it was a man and his daughter, and they just looked broken. They said they had been driving around for hours and they couldn't find the place. He said, I am looking for Newtown Park Avenue. And it was just wonderful because I actually knew where Newtown Park Avenue was and it was really near and it was really easy to get to.
Okay.
And I said, well, look it, this is wonderful. You drive up to the top of the road, you turn left. You turn left again and you are on Newtown Park Avenue. And I said, what are you looking for on that road? And they said, the school. And I said, okay, that's great. The school is right down near the end, but it's a long road. You'll think you've passed it, but you won't have. All you need to do is keep driving and you cannot miss it. And the man said, we are so grateful to you. You know, we are so lucky that you are the person that we stopped at and that you were able to help us. And I said, so you've got it now, up to the top of the road to the lights, turn left again, keep driving and you will find it. And, you know, my heart was so full because I was able to help the people and they were so happy because they were going to get where they wanted to go. So up they drove to the top of the road and I was watching their brake lights and they turned left. And I realised that I had meant to say right.
Oh, no.
I know. They're probably still driving. because they trusted me, Stephen. Like, they trusted me.
What I love most about that story is that you threw in, you'll think you've passed it.
Yes, you've passed it, but
keep
you haven't.
Going.
Keep driving. They
keep,
are still driving.
Have faith in me and my directions and keep driving. They were
because
looking for a school,
keep...
you say. Were they?
Yes.
Well, maybe they've just found it now and we're here, darling. Oh, so,
yes.
We're sorry you're 30 now. But...
Yes, but I told you I'd get you here, didn't I? Isn't it horrific? Like that genuinely, I am prickling with sweat even telling you.
Is it just a left-right confusion? Is that what's going on?
It was
more than
that. It was a performance anxiety as well.
Okay.
Like, you know, I was put on the spot. I mean, I am very bad with saying left when I mean right.
Right.
And, you know, and I am bad spatially. I'm bad. I can't imagine directions in a 3D way.
But you live in Dublin. I mean, that's a fairly hard city to get around, but you must know it well. And
I only know how to get to places I have already been. If I drive into the centre of Dublin, there is one car park that I know how to get to. But if it's closed, I have to keep driving and go straight home.
You're
like,
kidding.
I cannot improvise. There's no way I can be spontaneous with driving. I'm just really bad at it.
So they came along and you were all ready to, with a heavy heart, say, look, I'm the wrong person.
Oh, yes.
But because it was so easy, mm-hmm. that adrenaline rush that filled,
yeah, like genuinely, that is what happened. I suddenly felt, oh, I am a useful person. I can actually help these people. It went to my head. Like in that moment, I just lost control.
A little
control.
Bit of hubris.
That's exactly it.
Because there is a sort of glow that you get when you help people, isn't there? I love being stopped in the street and I love it when I have to think for a minute and then it comes to me and I can, because you feel all powerful, you feel beneficent, you feel you're lifting a load.
Worthwhile.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But like that you have made a difference in somebody else's life in that
day. And also
day.
That they've looked at you and thought, they look like they know what they're doing. And they were right, because I know where to... But of course, and you had no way of getting them back.
Yes. That was the biggest mistake they ever made, thinking that I looked like I knew what I was talking about.
So what you should do next time is say, look, I write fiction and non-fiction, so this may be...
Exactly.
Maybe the truth, it might not be.
Probably won't be.
Oh, dear. And that's was how long ago? 20 years?
At least 20 years.
And you still feel what when you think of that?
Sorrow, shame. No, sorrow more than anything, because I let them down. And, I often worry that they might think that I was actually kind of having them on, that I thought, look it, I know what would be hilarious. They're already at a breaking point and this will just finish them off entirely.
Well, like, they might hear this. They might hear this broadcast.
Yeah, do you know, I have actually wondered if maybe they might.
If you are listening, weary couple who've been driving for 20 years looking for us, please do get in touch, because Marianne would like to
apologise. I am really, really sorry. Maybe they will hear this. Or maybe other people who got bad directions will hear it.
Yeah.
And even though the apology is from the wrong person, maybe they'll feel better.
Well, that's great. I think we should settle down and hear your second confession.
Okay. It was my first day at school. And this was Ireland in the 60s. And I had a new pair of mittens, and back then everybody's mittens were sort of the same because Ireland in the 60s was like Albania in the 70s. You know, consumer choice was limited. Yeah. Anyway, so I had my lovely new mittens and they were brown leather, but the backs of them were furry. So you looked like a bear, like they were lovely. So it was my first day with my mittens and we were walking to the class and I dropped one of my mittens. And I was so crippled with shyness and self-consciousness and utter mortification at having done something wrong. I couldn't pick up my glove. I wasn't able to. So I kept on walking. I didn't want to draw attention to myself. And the whole thing was just awful. So we got into our first classroom and we sat down and we got our chairs and, you know, big, big day. And then a bigger girl, and she could have been 8 maybe, right, came into the class with my mitten and held it up and said, did somebody drop a mitten? And like, I looked at it and I knew it was my mitten and I denied it. Like I sat and I was mute. I couldn't speak up in front of the class. So it was taken away and I had to watch it go and I couldn't say anything. And then I went home and Mammy Keys fairly quickly realised that we were down one mitten, that we were only operating at 50% capacity of mittens. And she asked me about it. And I was too afraid to tell her that A, I had dropped it and B, I had denied it. She made some investigations and found out that it had been handed in to the school office. And I was told to go there. And again, the terror. But I did go. Mm-hmm. And I told my little story. And they said, oh, yes, yes, we have it. And they went off to a drawer and brought it over to me. And it wasn't my mitten. It was very similar. But like my mitten was like a cute little bear. And this one was like a rough old dog who'd been in a fight. Like it was mangy and threadbare and bigger. And in fact, I think it might even have been the same hand. You know, so I had two left-hand mittens now. And again, I could say nothing. I took it from the nice lady and I brought it home to my mother who, like, I was 4 then. And I think she must have realised by then that, like, it was about time to despair of me. So, yeah, until I outgrew the smaller mitten, those were my mittens.
Well,
for
maybe
those
having,
school days.
Maybe growing up with 2 left mittens is the reason why you couldn't give directions later on.
Oh!
That could have
now
been the...
you see!
You see? You it's all linked together.
Yes. You see, that's why people do therapy. Yeah. You
to
see,
make those connections.
Exactly. You see, it can be no accident that I brought up both these stories.
It can't be. No,
no.
Absolutely not. So to talk about the build-up to going to school, were you given instructions about being a good girl? I mean, were you told to keep your head down? Were you told to keep quiet, to do what you were told? Right.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, the greatest pinnacle of womanhood in Ireland in the 60s was to be completely mute.
Right.
You know, to work until you dropped.
Yeah.
To anticipate everybody's needs except your own.
Yeah.
To never draw attention to yourself. To never ask for anything.
Yeah.
And to never, ever, ever step out of line. Right. You know, and I had internalized that so obediently. And like, I got to try it all out on my first day at school.
My granny's favourite expression was feed the men.
Oh,
that was her.
I know.
Yeah, that was it. My sisters didn't get any food. I got it all.
Oh, and it was illegal for Irish mothers to sit down during the meal.
Yeah.
You know, they had to stand and hover. And watch the men eating the meat and potatoes. And then once the potatoes got under 12,
Panic
they had to go
stations.
And pile more onto the plates.
Go and dig up a few more, definitely.
Feed the men. Isn't that shocking?
It's absolutely shocking. I mean, I remember getting salmon and she gave me a huge bit of salmon and then she said to my sisters, have you ever eaten salmon? And they said, no, we've never tried it. She said, what you don't know, you won't miss. And she gave it all to me.
Oh, stop it.
Yeah, there we go. What would you say to that little girl now?
I suppose what I would say to the little girl is there will come a day when you will be on a radio show and you will say exactly what you feel and think in the moment and you won't feel ashamed and you won't feel judged. That would be good.
That's great. I don't want to add another layer of guilt to this story, but
have you ever
wondered whose mitten, you'd taken?
Yes, I mean...
Someone's getting into trouble for missing a mitten. Where's that old moth-eaten mitten that we gave you?
That has gone through like several generations of the family. It's an heirloom, child. What have you done with it?
So, okay, your sense of direction obviously gives you a hard time. You know, you've ashamed of being noticed as a child. What's interesting about this show is that some people come on and they say they feel no shame at all. You obviously feel a lot less shame now about the mitten thing. You can look back on that little girl and think, you know, poor thing. I mean, product of the way you were brought up or the environment you were brought, you know, at school and stuff. So you're much more forgiving now. I mean, if you drop things now, you pick them up, I presume.
I do. Yes. Yeah. With swag, with aplomb.
let's see if shame figures in your final confession.
Right. I write novels, but there are certain types of journalism that I love doing. And there was a magazine that I had always yearned to write for. We'll call it the Sunday Times style supplement.
Right.
And I loved everything about it. I loved their tone. I love what they write about. And after kind of years of badgering, I got commissioned to write a couple of pieces. They'd published three of my pieces and I was just so happy. And next thing, I got an invitation to their Christmas party and you have no idea how thrilled I was. So even though I'm in Ireland, I was going to go to London. I was going to fly to London, you know, get a hotel, go to the party and bond. Because I thought if they met me in person, that they might give me more work.
Right.
And the invitation said, come as a Joan. And they gave examples like, Joan Crawford, Joan Collins, Joan Rivers, Joan of Arc. And I thought, Joan of Arc, I can do Joan of Arc. So I booked the hotel, I booked the flight. I told my husband he could come, but he couldn't actually come to the party. That he could come to carry my sword and my shield. We'll get to that. but that he couldn't come because I would be too busy, you know, eating whatever you eat, Pringles. I thought it would be, so there'd be about 35 of us and we'd be in a room and there might be mini mince pies and, you know, Christmassy things.
Yeah.
But I thought,
sparkling conversation.
Exactly. So I ordered two separate Joan of Arc costumes from the internet. And so I put them together and there was like chainmail tights. There was a chainmail sort of snood. And then there was a big white tunic that looked like a pillowcase, but it had a red cross painted on it. And then I bought a plastic shield and a latex sword and I had high boots. And like, I was fabulous. Do you know
what I'm saying? You fully Joan of Arc, yeah.
I mean, really. And I did say to my husband, but I was only sort of joking, that I might bring briquettes and firelighters just for the props. And he said, you've enough props. And he said, and you're not going to get that sword through security at Dublin Airport because I was only bringing hand luggage because I was only going for the night.
Right.
So off we go and we get to Dublin Airport and they take the sword off me. And I am upset. I'm not even upset. I suppose I'd anticipate. I said, that's grand. take it. I'll go to Hamley's as soon as I get to London. I'll buy another one. And they said, do what you like. Good luck. So I went and I got on the plane and we got to London and I went to Hamley's and I bought another latex sword. And then we went to our lovely hotel. And then I put on my tunic and my chainmail and my boots and I got my sword and I got my shield and I got a taxi. Now, the party was being held in legendary London nightclub Tramp. And okay. So I told the taxi driver to take me to legendary London nightclub Tramp in Jermyn Street. And he said, funny enough, he said he didn't know where it was, but which sounds odd to me. So we're driving along Jermyn Street. And the next thing you can see all this commotion up ahead, like all these lights were flashing and there was like clicking noises. And I realised, mother God, it's paparazzi.
Wow.
And so the taxi pulls up.
Yeah.
And I noticed, yeah, there was paparazzi. And then there was about 20 really tall, really skinny, fabulous looking girls. And they were models. And none of them were dressed as a Joan. And I just, you know, the cold hand of fear was around my heart. And I had such a desire to say to the driver, keep going, don't stop. No, it's fine. Just keep driving. Take me back to the hotel. But like a fool, I got out. And I, you know, so I get out of the taxi in all my accoutrements, you know, the knee boots, the chain mail, the whole thing. And the paparazzi all swivel around and look at me. And they were aghast. They were like, what is this? What is it dressed as? And why is it so short? And no. And then as if like collective blindness had come over them, like they just all, you know, swiveled back to the beautiful girls. And so very, very anxious, I went in. And it wasn't 35 people in an office eating mini mince pies. There was easily 1,000 people there. And I was the only one in fancy dress.
Oh, Mary.
Nobody else had come as anything. I mean, to this day, I still don't understand it. The tragedy was that I remained on mission for a while.
Yeah.
That I'm going to find the editor. I am.
Okay. Okay.
I'm going to find her and we will talk and she will like me because
and
I will make her.
It's a good icebreaker
her.
As well, the clothes.
Yes.
And the, yeah.
Yes. But everybody was giving me such more. So they were like, they were so shocked, you know? Like they were looking at the sword and they were looking at the shield. So I lost the sword really fast. And then I lost the shield. And then I took off the snood and the legendary London nightclub Tramp is downstairs mostly. So I fought my way to the thousands and thousands of people and everybody else knew everybody. They were all kissing each other and calling each other darling and hugging each other. And, you know, they were all in the gang.
Right.
And I was the
Joan of Arc trying to shoulder her way through the crowd.
Yes. And they were
to get to the bar.
You know, and I, you know, even now I can remember some of the glances and the looks I got. And it just,
I mean, starting a fire in that situation would probably be a good idea to create a diversion.
Yes, look over there.
I mean, again, I suppose it's another story of being seen in
yeah.
an unwanted way, of,
yes.
of standing out.
Yes.
But, you know, but not, again, not your fault. I mean, this is an you know, too much enthusiasm for the project. You know, you're bringing,
yes.
you really went for it in a really lovely way. So
oh, thank you.
But what's with the Joan thing? I mean, was there a famous Joan there? I've never heard of that as a...
No, as a, I mean, I've never got to the bottom of it, like ever, you know, because, you know, the editor and I did have contact afterwards and she just kind of laughed vaguely when I mentioned it. Yeah. I mean, is it a thing in the
fashion
world?
I've never heard
world?
Of it. I mean, how long did you last at the party?
I'd say about 4 minutes, like between fighting to the bottom of the stairs and then I was offered a drink. And the thing is, I don't drink. So this lovely man came towards me with a tray of champagne and I said, have you any water? And the shock made him trip and he spilt champagne all over my lovely tunic, my pillowcase tunic. And that was the moment. So I thought, look at your grand. So I fought my way back up the stairs and I came back out and the paparazzi looked at me again. And they were once again bemused and once again turned away. And then in all the stress, I'd forgotten the street that the hotel was on. So I couldn't actually get a taxi. So I rang my husband to find out where I was staying that night. And it was it was such a short time since I'd left that he thought I was ringing for directions to legendary London nightclub Tramp. And I had to say, no, I'm on my way home. And he was a bit, what? But so I came, so I got into a taxi and I came home, and then we watched I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Did you they know, take you? I mean, are there photos that are searchable on the internet?
Aren't. No, there aren't.
I would give anything for a shot of you looking funny sheepish enough, as
Joan
of Arc.
The funny thing is, I filmed a little film before I left, because I used to, I have a little YouTube channel, and I used to post a little film every Monday, a short film. And so I have one of me, and I am standing with my foot on briquettes. I'll see if I can find it for you. I mean, there is photographic proof, just not in the hands of the paparazzi. Thank God.
I don't think you have anything to be ashamed of. It's, I mean, I can understand the embarrassment, because who wants to stand out in that way?
Yeah.
Wearing gear that's, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't just that though, Stephen. I mean, it was just that everybody there was so beautiful and so kind of glamorous. They were, you know, they were other. I think even if I had come in my ordinary clothes, the paparazzi would have been bemused by me. You know, I'm sort of short and a bit potato-esque. And that whole thing just felt very, I felt very, oh, rejected, I suppose.
Right. That feeling you get when you're
When you're all wrong.
Your face doesn't fit. I mean, are there parties that you enjoy? I mean, you said you were introverted earlier on. Are there occasions that you know, you're the life and soul, or is that?
I'm never the life and soul. And I mean, prior to kind of the current unpleasantness, the loveliest thing that could ever happen to me was like getting a text on a Saturday afternoon saying tonight is off. Like I love not having to do things. Yeah,
right.
Exactly. But yeah. No, I am craving parties at the moment. I mean, I am absolutely dying to just be in a room with 250 really noisy people.
Joan of Arc's. Yeah.
Oh, maybe I'll have a party.
I have FOGO, I think it's called, fear of going out at the moment.
Yeah,
it's been
too.
So long that I wonder whether I'd be any good at it, you know.
Oh, no, you won't be. Not for a while.
Yes.
No.
Forget how to speak to people.
I feel like one of those oddballs who's been living on a remote farm for 40 years. And so when somebody finally arrives at the farmhouse because they need help because they've had a burst tire or something, and the person literally can't.
Directions.
Yeah. Or they're looking for their lost mitten. Yeah. And like, I would no longer be able to speak. I would just be communicating in grunts.
Yeah,
I mean,
we'd come out blinking into the sunlight
with sort
exactly of bits of food all over us.
Unable to form
a sentence in English anymore.
Totally. Because, I tried having a little chat with my postman this morning and we were both beaten by it. You know, like we managed about 6 or 7 words each and then I had to go back and lie down for a while.
Well, Marianne, I'm so glad you accepted your invitation to this particular
pleasure.
Party. I'm glad we managed to get rid of the paparazzi for you. Do you feel any less ashamed now?
You've been very kind.
Well,
very kind.
People come on here, and I my hand reaches for the phone to call the police. But yours have been heartbreaking because they are, you know, that social awkwardness really dialed up. I mean, I feel for the woman who gave the directions, flushed with excitement at being able to help somebody, only to make their day a lot worse.
Yes.
My heart breaks for the little girl, unable to, you know, even put a hand in the air and say, that's my mitten. But Marianne Keyes, thank you so much for visiting the confessional.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for thank you for the absolution.
This was a 7 Digital production for BBC Radio 4.